Good morning or good afternoon, wherever you are. Today, I wanted to speak to cravings. Many times I will work with patients and they do really well for a period of time. They kind of white knuckle through cravings and they think they're on the right path to sustaining healthy eating changes. And then something happens. They have a stressful event or some crisis occurs and it takes them out of their routine and their environment, and they fall back to old habits. And they get really frustrated with themselves because they can't seem to figure out, I know what I should be doing, but I can't stick with it. Why is this happening to me? Why can't I, stop this habitual, pattern that I'm finding myself in? Well, there's a lot of reasons here, but I think there's a really interesting tool that I'd like to share with you that I've seen work amazing things in my own life. But this can be even outside of the context of healthy eating. Worrying, which is one of my things that I would often deal with, anxiety in the sense of always needing to control something to make sure that it turned out the way that I wanted it. That would be, I think, what someone would classify as a type A personality. So, regardless of where you're struggling in life, this tool is universal in the sense that it can help you with these kind of destructive patterns that we seem to always repeat in our life, yet we can't seem to stop it. Well, first of all, I want to share with you, basically, I'm going to talk about the eating just as in context of a certain topic, but like I said, this certainly could be in something else. So really, if you think about it, in our journey towards health and weight loss, for example, our minds operate on autopilot, right? They lead us to fall into kind of dietary and lifestyle patterns without much conscious thought. Many times we learn these from our families, so we learn lifestyle behaviors. What many times people may think, oh, my parents had type 2 diabetes, oh, my parents had heart disease, oh, my parents are overweight, I'm just going to be that same way. This kind of gets back to the saying I like to repeat often is, genetics may load the gun, but lifestyle, your environment, and your mental environment will literally pull the trigger. So now it doesn't mean that certain genetic cases of some things can always be detoured, but I think they can be attenuated or turned down the effect or the severity. But I digress. Let's move on. But while some habits can be beneficial, right? Maybe we learn how to exercise regularly or play sports when we're younger. But others can sabotage our health, right? So maybe we develop an unhealthy relationship with food in response to stresses or anxiety in our families. Or maybe we learn to see ourselves, our own internal selves, with disgust if we're not meeting a certain perceived expectation of some physical form. So again, there's lots of nuances to where we end up in our life, but just know wherever you are in your situation in your life, things can absolutely change and you have the power within your mind to do so. And this gets to what I refer to as mindfulness meditation, right? So it really offers a kind of a transformative approach to disrupt the automatic processes or habits, and encourage more mindful eating and living, right? So let's talk about how mindfulness can really reshape our eating behaviors, facilitate weight loss, understand that we really can be the conductor of our own lives. So first of all, let's understand mindfulness in the context again of weight loss. So mindfulness is a practice of maintaining a non-judgmental awareness of one's thoughts, emotions, or experiences on a moment-to-moment basis. It means that we're not living in the future, we're not living in the past, we're living in this present moment. And I talk about this often and how it can be so incredibly powerful to really understand how living in the moment can happen very quickly and give you such peace and calm. But let me go back here. Really, the piece here is to understand that heightened awareness can be super effective when we're addressing certain automatic behaviors or habits like overeating or compulsive eating or cravings in particular. So recent studies had illustrated that mindfulness meditation attenuates or turns down the dial or reduces the force of the automatic mental operations, thereby aiding in significant behavioral change, right? So mindfulness increases our awareness of the present moment and enhances our ability to control our cognitive processes, which is crucial for breaking free from, right, the cycles of compulsive eating. Basically, what that means is that we're turning off the habit and the subconscious doings, and we're engaging our thinking brain. Our cognitive, amazing prefrontal cortex is coming online to say, hey, what's going on here? Let me see. It's kind of like the parent coming back to the room and saying, what are y'all doing? Think of it that way. So basically, another study in 2013 really kind of shed some light on this by showing that mindfulness facilitates the discontinuation of the automatic mental operations through enhanced cognitive control and what would they describe as metacognitive insight, which is basically the thinking of thinking, being the observer of your thoughts. I had never heard of this until I read this study about metacognitive insight, which is basically being the observer of your emotions, observing your thoughts, observing them as a separate entity and not just reacting to them. Basically, that this means that mindfulness helps us become aware of our eating habits, right? Understand their triggers and outcomes, like what happens when we engage in them, and gives us the ability to consciously choose to respond differently. So how do we break these patterns in eating, right? So let me describe to you what mindfulness does. So mindfulness modifies your habit loop, right? So basically, that's the concept of forming and maintaining habits. The traditional habit loop has a cue, which is a trigger or a prompt, and a routine, which is also the behavior, and the reward, which is your outcome. Now, in the context of eating, an example might be you feel stressed, that's your cue. Eating junk food is the routine or the behavior, and then temporarily feeling relief or pleasure, that's the reward, right? So that would be a habit loop. Now, mindfulness introduces a really important piece here. It introduces space and time, or a pause in the loop. So let's go. You have a cue or trigger. Next, instead of the routine, you would have awareness and insight. Thinking brain comes on. Then this moves to you actually have a choice, right? You're not just falling through the normal habit and the behavior. You're going, huh, okay, now I understand that was my trigger. I feel I can observe the feelings or the emotions or the thoughts that are occurring. That's the awareness piece. That's the mindfulness piece. And now I have a choice. I can engage in a different behavior, or I can choose to go ahead and engage in the behavior that I initially, the habit loop started. But the difference here is that as you are practicing that mindfulness muscle, you're going to have a different type of experience or a different understanding of the reward. So remember, the old reward was, let's say that you were stressed, you ate junk food, and you had a reward because you had a temporary relief because sugar gives you a little bit of a high, you get a dopamine thing, you felt in control, and you were avoiding dealing with whatever the negative consequence or negative emotion was. With the mindfulness piece of it, you have stress, cue, urge, craving to eat something unhealthy, but you're coming on board with mindfulness. You're aware of it. Maybe you had created a new prompt of mindfulness. So let's say that you were stressed and your Snickers bars are in the cabinet, but you put a big old stop sticker or something on there, and that stop sticker was intended for you to halt, provide an opportunity for the thinking brain to come online. So before you open the cabinet, you had already preconceived and the idea of, like, I'm going to create mindfulness into this habit, because you understood your habits of overeating when you were stressed or eating something that was unhealthy. So now you have the stop sign. The stop sign is like saying, hey, thinking brain, I need you to come on board. There's some issues going on here with the child. The child's running amok. The thinking brain goes, how am I feeling right now? Am I hungry? Do I really want this? What's going on in this emotional? Like, what's my body feeling? What are the thoughts? What led to this? And that curiosity is such an empowering emotion in and of itself. It creates its own dopamine. And so as you go through that process of gently observing and asking questions and understanding the context of, that's the important piece here, the context of that emotion or the context of the behavior, you get to make a different choice. You get to decide if that emotion continues to feed that habit, or you can say, actually, no, I don't want to continue to feed this habit with this behavior. And that in and of itself is decreasing or dampening or attenuating, turning down the reward of that habit loop, right? That habit loop of eating poorly. And that is so powerful. It could be the same thing for, let's say that you have a tendency for anger or anxiety. You're stressed or worried. One for me as a mother, I will tell you, it can get pretty bad. So especially as the children get older and they're out on their own, they're adults, you can't do anything. You have lost control. And I think there's a couple of things here. One, I'm losing my identity as a parent. Lo and behold, children grow up and live their own lives. Wow, what an insight. Number two is you worry about their, because you love them and you want them to be safe, right? How do I utilize mindfulness to tamper down my anxiety loop about not having control or worrying about my children's safety? Number one, you feel the emotion. The children are saying, or someone, one of them would say, I'm traveling to Spain, Mom, for 2 weeks with my friends. This is a grown woman who is more than capable of caring for herself, my child, let's say. This actually happened. And instead of saying, wonderful, have a great time, and just say, be careful, let me know if you need anything, I was like, turn on your phone so I know where you are always. This has really happened. She's a gracious soul and did that for me. So I literally, while she's spending 2 weeks having a time of her life, if I had this worry that I couldn't get hold of her or thinking that, you know, had some strange feeling that something's going to be bad, I would literally look where she is and know that she was okay. It's insanity. Anyway, this is how my brain works. As I became aware of the cycle that I was feeding, right, that prompting to look at the phone and see where she was, it just got more and more. I mean, it was ridiculous. I would be checking like 10, 15 times a day. And when I understood what was occurring, I was like, wow, Lori, what is going on with you? I can't live my life like this. I can't be worrying and anxious about it. And that's just one context. Imagine all the other things in our lives that cause the same type of thing, but it could be different emotions. So it really was interesting, the mindfulness thing, as I became aware of it. And I started, let's say, I'll explain how I used mindfulness, not understanding what I was doing. It just kind of evolved on its own. I would have the prompt of worry. And it started almost as a feeling like, or maybe I'd watch a movie and something about a young woman being kidnapped or God knows what. The emotion would creep up and my is like, God, just make sure Emily's okay. So I would look on the phone and see where she was. As I was aware of that, I would start feeling the emotion. Then I was like, here it comes again. The one really helpful thing I've decided is naming it. Naming the emotion, the habit, the feeling, whatever that is, naming it has been very helpful. So my Mama Marbus emotion would kick in. It's like an FBI agent. We're going to find that child where she is because we're going to come into the rescue. As I saw Mama Marbus start evolving and coming up, I was like, okay, Mama Marbus, it's okay. You're all right. I need you to step back and appreciate what's going on here. So as I did that and understood the awareness was the piece that was really important, because then as I, it was almost like a craving, right? So like I'd feed the craving by looking on the phone, but as I became aware and I allowed that emotion to pass through and observe it and not engage with it, lo and behold, the desire to look on the phone and see where she was pass by. And that's where the habit began to break. And it doesn't mean that I still don't do that on occasion. She is very kind and still let me see where she is because she's like far, far away. But now it's an interesting thing to be aware of. It's almost entertaining to me at this point where these emotions can take you in your mind. But anyway, that is kind of a really good analogy in my own life, how anxiety or worry about the children when they're grown can manifest into an unhealthy habit. The same thing can occur with your eating. You can utilize anything else that you want as the moment. It could be honestly just recognizing that you have an emotion and feeling it. That could be the prompt for you to step back and have a mindful moment. Or maybe you use a visual prompt or something. I like to utilize this ring that I created. It says, breathe, be present now. And whenever I see it, I practice, even when I don't necessarily need to feel like I need to disrupt something that's unhealthy, I practice mindfulness because maybe I'm thinking about something in the future, be it something exciting or not so pleasant. I'm creating some story or element which creates this emotion and anxiety and perception, and it sets me up for failure potentially, often most of the time. Or maybe I will be ruminating about something in the past. I do less of that now, more of it's towards future tripping. But the practice of just mindfulness in your general daily routine is super, super helpful. And I try to do this every morning because it really sets me up for a really mindful day, right? So if I practice that mindfulness, my intention is to be very mindful in my morning walks. That will help me be more mindful in the regular parts of my day. So anyway, utilizing some physical prompt can be very helpful in the beginning, especially as you're just bringing online mindfulness or you're utilizing it in a very ingrained habit. And so I think it's really important that we utilize mindfulness as much as possible. We can teach our kids this as well. So I was listening to a podcast called Hidden Brain, and they were interviewing this woman. Her name has just left me. It'll get back to me in a minute as I'm now listening to her book. She had a two-year-old, and the two-year-old would have these tantrums. She's a psychologist, neuroscientist, and instead of becoming overcome with emotion and throwing herself on the floor, they're like, man, we really need to help this child figure out another way besides having a tantrum. We need to help her learn self-regulation, right? And so what was interesting is this 2 and 3 year old, and she was two or three, somewhere you can have some verbal understanding of the child, can understand what you're wanting her to do, was this. After a tantrum and she's calmed down, you just don't engage, asking the child, you can do this for yourself because we have inner tantrums. You see where I'm going here?
We're allowing ourselves different
ways of dealing with
okay.
things.
Okay. I found this on the web for Go and a really, really
serious.
Go ahead. Guys.
Sorry. The piece here that was important was, okay, they have the two-year-old that's doing tantrums. After she had a tantrum and it's really fresh on her mind, it's like, how are you feeling? She, you know, what was that? You know, speaking to the emotion of it, it was a separate entity, which it really is, right? It's like, do you think that if that emotion or that feeling, whatever that child describes it as, has a name, maybe give it a name. Cranky Nelly, Crazy Karen, I don't know. No offense if any of those are your names. I'm just throwing out name opportunities. And okay, so can you describe what was feeling going on in your body? Helping the child understand that when she starts feeling tense or holding her breath or the tummy gurgles or whatever it is for that child, feeling that emotion is the prompt. Men created, what they did is they created a safe place. I think it was an Elmo chair or something where they said, I think it's called the cranky fairy. That's what they ended up calling it. When the cranky fairy is starting to come, go sit in the Elmo chair because Elmo has special powers and Elmo will protect you from the cranky fairy. And they gave her some other things to do in the Elmo chair. Maybe she'd play with toys. Maybe she'd read a book. Maybe she'd sing a song. You know, maybe it could be a song about how the cranky fairy is going to have to go find somewhere else to land. But what was interesting, she said that over time, the child would just march herself over there and just keep herself in the tantrums decreased. What was beautiful about this is that she's learning this mindfulness of her own body, right? She's staying in tune with emotions and that she gets to create a different scenario. She doesn't have to respond emotionally or physically by throwing yourself on the floor and feeling out of control, that even a young child in temper tantrums can be redirected. And we can do the very same thing to ourselves when we literally choose to continue to engage in activities that are harmful for ourselves. We continue to eat unhealthy foods because we deserve it. I've literally had patients tell me, well, Dr. Marbus, I know you're telling me to eat healthier, but there's a rebellious teenager in me saying, I don't want to. This is just a two-year-old temper tantrum. And literally, does this make sense? No, it doesn't. So what if we chose to bring the parent back on board, the parent thinking brain, and say, how does this make sense? And that's kind of the discussion where people feel shame or guilt or stress about they keep repeating these behaviors because we don't understand that we literally can create new habits, right? We can literally decide the emotional response or the response to an emotion or the reaction or non-reaction. Just by being aware of it is the first step. And then you gain more power as you continue to utilize this mindfulness muscle and the reward decreases. And I mean, I guess another analogy would be, for example, a pilot, right? So you have pilot and the autopilot. So imagine your brain is an airplane where you have habitual eating habits, habitual eating behaviors, kind of like the airplane's autopilot system, right? So the autopilot is programmed to handle tasks based on past experiences. So efficiently, but without awareness of current needs or goals, right? So if the autopilot settings lead to unhealthy choices, it could steer you away from your weight loss goals. So if your autopilot around eating is stress, eat, feel better, that's what your autopilot's going to continually do because that's what you've learned from the past that works, right? So you went to a birthday party when you were little, you were given cake. Cake tastes good, you feel good. The social context is, I feel good, less stress. In the future, the brain's like, remember that. I feel stressed. Remember that day you had that birthday cake when you were little? Let's go eat some of that because that made you feel better. So when you ate the birthday cake, then you feel better because it is associated with the context of feeling good, right? So now we're laying down the pattern of eating birthday cake or sweets or whatever when we feel stressed because that makes us feel better. So we think that's just what we do. We feel that we can't stop it. We feel that everything else is to blame. The environment, yes, the environment can make it harder, but at the end of the day, we do have power to make different choices. It may not feel like it at first, and it can be difficult and almost emotional because you're like, how can this possibly be? But let's think of it back to the autopilot and the pilot, for example. Now you have the autopilot, which we just described, is doing what it's learned from past experiences and engaging in behaviors because it's predicting this will make you feel better. So engage in that behavior. Your brain's predicting something. So it's telling you to do something to get the outcome that it would perceive as good, right? So the pilot represents your mindful self, right? It's trained to observe and understand the current conditions and the feelings, right? So when the pilot notices the autopilot is steering the plane off course, such as towards unhealthy eating, they can switch off the autopilot and take manual control, right? So this action allows for thoughtful responses to hunger and stress rather than mindlessly following our unhealthy eating patterns. So in conclusion, really, it's just at the end of the day, mindfulness not only disrupts the habit loop, but it also enables the destruction or dismantling of our old eating habits, right? Instead of continuing down the same path, we get to change the path. We get to disrupt the habit, create new habits, and live a healthier life, right? But again, not only with weight loss and eating, but with anxiety, as I've shown with you myself, it can be with so many emotions that you're feeling that are negatively impacting your life. And so I hope that all makes sense. It's a very interesting concept, and I continue to think about it and learn about it and try to think about new ways to convey this for you. But I think the autopilot pilot analogy is probably the easiest to understand and just think about. And maybe think about, you can say, oh, the autopilot is back. All right, autopilot, I'm going to have to turn you off for the moment. But anyway, I hope you found this helpful. And always, I want to say thank you for being here, sending you love, joy, peace, and abundance and healing, knowing we all need a little bit more of that in our lives today. So have a good weekend, the rest of you guys, and I'll be back tomorrow.